Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later in the hour, Iowa's Mission of Mercy has served 14,000 dental patients over the last 11 years. I'll talk with Dr. Ben Lloyd about this free dental clinic. But first, anyone who has observed the growth of wine culture in this country will probably not be too surprised to learn that American women are drinking more. The t-shirts and memes are fun and funny, but there are also some very serious consequences that come along with increased alcohol consumption. A team of researchers at Iowa State University has decided to take a deep look at this trend, find out who's drinking more and what's driving it. Susan Stewart is here, professor of sociology at Iowa State University. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Charity.
Gloria Jones Johnson, also a professor of sociology at Iowa State University, is part of this team and is here. Hello, Gloria.
Hello, good morning.
And Cassandra Dorius, assistant professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State, is also with us. Hello, Cassandra.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you all for being here. And Susan, I'm going to ask you to start. Tell me what prompted this research.
Sure. I happened across some CDC data that showed alcohol use is increasing in the United States, but it's increasing particularly rapidly in recent decades among women on all measures. So women just drinking or not, number of days they drink, and the amount of alcohol they drink on any given day. But there wasn't a lot of information on, as you said, what's driving this trend, what kinds of women, you know, what are their characteristics associated with drinking more versus less. There's very little data except anecdotal data about why women are drinking more. And it just really fascinated me, especially because alcohol is responsible for more deaths than overdoses from opiates and all other drugs, and motor vehicle accidents, including motor vehicle accidents attributed to alcohol.
Oh, interesting. So one of the statistics that is cited is alcohol is the third leading preventable cause of death in the United States, and that's from the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. So it's an interesting thing to juxtapose against how we treat alcohol in our culture. Of course, we're surrounded by advertisements for alcohol, jokes about alcohol, t-shirts that feature alcohol and using alcohol, and you see it all over social media. So was it part of that dissonance that attracted you to this research, Susan?
Yes, because I saw it all around me myself. I mean, you run a 5K and there's a beer tent at the end. Just yesterday in Ames, I saw an advertisement for yoga and wine. There's lots and lots of movies. There's, you know, Bad Moms. There's Trainwreck. There's Book Club, where alcohol is glamorized, trivialized, and it's a slippery slope. I mean, how many drinks is too many? What makes a social drinker versus somebody who's, you know, stumbling into a problem? And then there's the marketing. And so there's flavored vodkas. There's wines that have names like Cupcake and Mad Housewife and Middle Sister that are targeting women. And there's nothing, you know, fundamentally wrong with that, except that it just becomes something that we see as acceptable. And combined with the data that I was seeing, I became really interested in this trend.
All right. And the three of you were able to dip into a survey that's been going on for a long time, the National Longitudinal Survey of Youth. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I'm going to let Dr. Dorius field those questions about that data set. So I'm going to hand it over to her.
So this is a real gem of a survey. It's been collected for over 30 years by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it started following women when they were in high school, and it followed them all the way through their, so far, into their mid-50s. And so it captures all of their relationship changes, all of their jobs, the amount of time that they've been in poverty, whether they live in rural or urban places, as well as their childbearing experiences. And because of the quality of the data, we were able to tease apart some really interesting things about the dimensions of a woman's life, like what her key characteristics are across all sorts of things, such as her race and ethnicity, her marital status, her motherhood status, her education, her employment, her poverty, her rurality, and really try to tease apart what that meant for this issue about alcohol. So, I think this is a real gem of a study that we've been able to capture some very interesting things. And in particular, we're looking at women whose children have just left the home, the empty nesters, which we'll talk about more in just a minute. But it's, you know, right before and after your last child leaves the home, how does your alcohol use change?
Well, and let's break this down a little bit, because I know that you've broken down the data by demographic. And Gloria, maybe you want to speak to this a little bit and tell us what you found there.
In terms of the data, we are taking an intersectional perspective toward examining the data. In particular, intersectional perspective takes into account the inequalities that women experience as a result of their social identities and their placement in the social structure. And consequently, we're able to look at African-American women, white women, and Hispanic women in our sample to tease out how their identity as women, of these women of color, impact their drinking experiences, as well as how they experience the empty nest as a result of their social identities and their placement in the social structure.
Okay, and you didn't just look at a person's demographic information by race and age, but also by rural versus urban,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and poverty status, number of children, and we have an array of characteristics that we're looking at, and again, the empty nest syndrome, their drinking patterns pre-empty nest, before the last child left the home, and post-empty nest.
Okay, well, go ahead.
So, Charity, one of the things we're thinking, I'm a demographer, so I love looking at how these trends change over time. And if I could jump in and say, like, three really interesting sort of demographic changes that have happened over this period. They really turn what you would expect kind of on its head. So what we know from prior literature across all sorts of studies that look at all sorts of outcomes is that, by and large, the more educated you are and whether or not you're married usually predicts much better health. And that's mental health, that's physical health, that's kind of across the board, self-reported health, you know, what doctors report, everything. And this is not what we're finding in this case. And so one of these really fascinating demographic findings that we have is that white, educated, married women have the highest level of alcohol use. And in fact, it's really important to say that these are white women, because African-American married women actually have lower levels of drinking. And African-American women, on average, have lower rates of ever drinking and number of days drinking for this. And then kind of a second fascinating thing is, you know, at this moment, we've talked a little bit about the empty nest, and that's when your youngest child leaves home. This is a point demographically when a lot of people end their marriages. So about 10% of women are going to dissolve their marriage after their last child leaves the home, within 10 years of that child leaving the home. And what our finding is it's the women who stay married who increase their drinking. The women who divorce and are now single do not increase their drinking. And so that is also like a really puzzling and interesting thing that we found. And then sort of a third thing that is fascinating about this is, again, a lot of times associated with health, you would think that the more children you have, the more dedicated you are to promoting these really healthy lifestyles and behaviors. And what we find is that women with the fewest number of children are the least likely to drink after their last child leaves the home. But as you have more children, this pattern becomes even stronger.
So interesting.
Just three really fascinating things coming across.
Well, there's so much to unpack, I think, with each one of those. But the overall finding is that this seems to be a habit of privilege.
Yes.
Yes, it would be.
Yes. Yeah. Which is interestingly, structurally, a flip of what we expect.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I mean, I can imagine someone listening right now and saying, okay, so maybe this is about freedom and equality, and we've had a double standard for women and their behavior for so long, and a stigma for, women who drink as opposed to men who drink. Is there an upside to this from what you're seeing?
Well, I think just anecdotally, I would say I was out with some girlfriends. We were talking about this study, and one of them said, oh, yeah, I plan to drink a lot more after my kids leave because now I can. You know, it was like this freedom principle. There's research that says that it's about depression and all sorts of other things. But, you know, this data itself doesn't necessarily answer the question. That's what makes the work that Susan's doing so valuable. So I want to throw it over to her to hear what she's been finding qualitatively on this.
Yeah. So, Susan, you are trying to go beyond these statistics and figure out what's going on with them. How are you approaching that?
Yeah. So I'm in the middle of a study where I'm interviewing women about their perceptions of alcohol, not just their behavior, but what they think about what they're seeing, why they think women are drinking. And just to follow up on what Dr. Dorius was saying, there's an independence effect going on. I mean, women are moving into professions where alcohol is part of the culture, whether it's sales or business or academia even, where going out for cocktails after work is important time to make connections with colleagues. So there's that. A lot of women I spoke with talked about wanting some me time, and alcohol is there and it's easy. And then also I interviewed one woman, it comes to mind, who's from an upscale suburb in West Des Moines. And she said she can't think of an activity that she's been to or an event or a party that didn't include alcohol. Whether that's a baptism or a child's birthday party or a block party where they have bouncy houses for the kids and kegs for the parents. And so there were lots of themes along those lines as well, but mostly the theme was stress in balancing work lives and home lives. And although husbands are doing more, it's still the bulk of the work at home, whether it's housework and childcare falls on the mother, and just an escape, you know, from that, and having a glass or two of wine after work or after the kids go to bed, you know, that seems to be a very common pattern.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about new research that shows that women are drinking alcohol more. More women are drinking, and more women are drinking more alcohol. We'll talk more about that in a moment. With me, Gloria Jones-Johnson, Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University, Susan Stewart, also Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University, and Cassandra Dorius, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in just about 15 minutes, we'll find out about Iowa's Mission of Mercy. It's a two-day-long free dental clinic that has been moving around the state for the last 11 years. It's coming up in Davenport in just a couple of weeks. I'll talk with one of the dentists who's involved in this project. Right now, we're talking about research that has found that women are drinking alcohol more often. So more women are drinking, and more women are drinking more alcohol. And one of the key findings of this research is that white, college-educated women are leading that charge. They're increasing their alcohol consumption more than women in other demographic groups. With me are Susan Stewart, Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University, Gloria Jones-Johnson, Professor of Sociology also at Iowa State University, and Cassandra Dorius, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State. And Cassandra, I want to talk with you for just a moment. I mean, one of the things that we are seeing, you know, we were just talking about perhaps women feeling more freedom, less stigma with regard to drinking. So maybe a positive change in our culture. And we were just talking about, you know, some of the ways that women are using alcohol to cope with stress. But we're also seeing a demographic change where women's life expectancy has leveled off in the last 5 years. Tell me more about that and how that might correlate with this alcohol use.
Absolutely. So we have, you know, there's this demographic phenomenon that has a lot of people worried. And it's not just people who study alcohol use or drug use, but it's this idea of deaths of despair. And that it's that we have these people who are in middle age and late middle age who are, for the first time in American history, we're actually seeing that the death rate is going up among this group. And when you look at why people are dying, you know, the story of drug use and alcohol use becomes a really important key part of this, as well as suicides and other things. And so this was one of the reasons, actually, that I even joined the project, is when Susan proposed this, it was like, yes, there is a lot to learn about the deaths of despair and how this is really harming women. And not just in like a silly and frivolous way, but women are actually dying because of this. And can we get any sort of handle on what that means? Now, that is not to say, I want to be clear that, I drink, and I so just to get that out there, we're not saying abstinence is the only key here. But this issue that it's actually been so destructive for women's health generally, and to such a point that it's actually reversing generations of positive momentum we have on extending our life course. So it's something that we should take really seriously, you know, as a nation, and come to grips with.
Well, and I'm not sure which one of you wants to take this, but in looking at the data, I mean, we talked about how more women are drinking, but can you give me sort of a quantifiable idea of how much more women are drinking, even if the women who were consuming alcohol before, but how much has their consumption increased? What are you seeing?
Well, I can speak to that. Overall, in the last decade, alcohol use, in terms of whether alcohol is consumed, or in the last two decades, it's about a 60% increase in the percentage of men and women who drink. I can give you some statistics about women's alcohol consumption versus men. Women have traditionally been consumed very low rates of alcohol until relatively recently. But now 56% of men had reported drinking in the last year compared to 48% of women. In the last 30 days. Men drink about 9.5 drinks per days per month, and women drink about 7 days per month. And men drink about 3.5 drinks per drinking time compared to about 2.5 for women. But 40% of men and women reported a heavy drinking day, at least one heavy drinking day, which is four or more drinks for women and five or more drinks for men. So that would be considered binge drinking. So that's nearly half of all drinkers. And drinking behavior is notoriously underreported in surveys. So you might even, add on to that.
I'd like to add, in terms of what Susan is pointing out that's unique about our study, is that we are using multiple mentions of alcohol consumption. We're looking at drink in the last 30 days, the number of days drank, and the number of drinks per day. And the drinking patterns for women and different women will vary across those different measures of alcohol consumption, which is an interesting finding in our study, is that we're looking at different indicators of alcohol consumption.
I was just going to ask Gloria, because Cassandra and Susan have already shared a little bit of what prompted them to get into this research. But Gloria, what drew you into it?
Similar kinds of issues about alcohol consumption, just how prevalent alcohol consumption is in our society, how everything we do socially is geared toward having a beer or drinking wine, and how the expectation is that for when you go to college in particular, that you're going to drink. And that seemed to have been an important thing. I've had two children to attend college and to graduate, and they never even considered consuming alcohol. And then that college experience was something that, as a reference group, that you're expected to drink when you're in college. And so this kind of sparked my interest in terms of looking at alcohol consumption among this age group, and then looking at what happened in particular to women, since women have been, the marketing of alcohol to women has been so prevalent, and looking at how that impacts their life chances and their lifestyles over time, from a life course perspective. So looking at alcohol from a life course perspective and an intersectional perspective are the two critical keys for me for being a part of the project is to be able to look at it across a lot of different categories and socio-structural dimensions of our lives.
Well, and that's very interesting because as we've been talking about, you are seeing that more women who are college educated are more likely to drink. And
yes.
I mentioned earlier that this seems to be a habit of privilege, but also with that expectation in college, with those ideas about college lifestyle,
yes.
It may be partially because of that experience. If that's something that you developed in college, it's something that you might carry forward.
Yes. Yes.
Beyond that.
I would like to add to that because the women I interviewed, some of them, I went back and I asked them, you know, tell me about your first drinking experience and your pattern growing up and in college. And yeah, many of these women, yeah, they went out with friends. They drank too much in college. They got hangovers. But they also noted it was a lot of fun in college and trying to, you know, when you're bogged down with childcare responsibilities and work, maybe getting a little bit of that back. That fun, you know, going out with friends. They sort of mention those things. I do want to mention just briefly that the youngest generation of our society, Gen Z, they actually have lower rates of alcohol consumption than previous generations drank at their age. And so what we're seeing is the most increase is among older women, midlife women, mothers, as opposed to college students. And, you know, that generation is too young to really understand exactly what's going on. But I did want to note that.
Right. And that generation is not in that stage of life yet. So we'll also see that develop over time as well. We're talking about demographic changes and women drinking alcohol more often over time. With me, three researchers who are working to understand what's driving this. Cassandra Dorius, assistant professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University, Gloria Jones-Johnson, Professor of Sociology at Iowa State, and Susan Stewart, Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University. We have a few minutes left, but if you'd want to join our conversation, if you have observations about this, concerns, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. So, Susan, you're doing, we've talked about quantitative research and taking a look at the numbers and what we can glean from that. But you're doing qualitative research. You're doing interviews. Tell me about the women that you've identified and that you're talking to.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have a very diverse sample at this point. I am interviewing women who, you know, saw my call for interviews and were interested in the project. These aren't necessarily heavy drinkers. These are women who just the only criteria is that they currently drink at least some alcohol some of the time. And so what, you know, the anecdotes out there about women's drinking, like the media, like women trying to, you know, have a stress release, those kinds of things. Yeah, I mean, those were issues, those are themes that definitely came up. What I'm looking for, especially based on our quantitative research, are more women of color and women of different demographics. So I've got a really good group of white college educated women. And yeah, they're talking about the things that we're talking about right now. But what I don't have in my sample yet are other women's experiences. And that's what I'm after, you know, coming up for this qualitative research project.
And so in inviting people to be part of this study, tell me more specifically who you're looking for. Who qualifies?
Well, I've interviewed about all the white college educated women that I need.
Okay.
So I'm looking for women who aren't that. Okay. So people can contact me if they're interested in the study and I can interview people, you know, Skype or that way or in person. And yeah. And so I'm looking for women who are older, who are not college educated, and especially women of color, especially given our results from our quantitative analysis.
And are you looking for women who use alcohol or don't use alcohol? Does it matter?
Yeah, they have to drink at least some of the time.
Right.
So not abstainers.
All right. And now when you are interviewing the women that you have connected with, do you ask them about their concerns about alcohol use? I mean, we know that this is an addictive substance. Do they have worries about that?
They do. And several of the women have family members who they consider alcoholic or who abuse alcohol. And they are well aware of the risks for themselves and for their children. So I asked them, are you having conversations with your own kids about alcohol? And they are, at least the women that I've talked to. And, you know, they've said, look, you've got a predisposition toward alcohol and you need to be really, really careful.
How about health effects of alcohol? I mean, we've seen the studies that say, oh, a glass of red wine is good for your heart. People like to grab onto those studies. Yeah. However, we've also seen the studies that show that drinking alcohol is correlated with an increased risk of cancer for anyone. Mm-hmm. So are women concerned about that?
I think increasingly they are. And if you note, if you go into the grocery store, you're now seeing a lot of lower alcohol products like seltzers and other kind, you know, low alcohol content beers. And I think there has been some awareness and recognition that, gee, it's not cool to be what some people call a wine mom. I mean, that's a thing. And that's considered, you know, maybe we should rethink this fun way that we're releasing stress.
Gloria, I know that you were talking earlier about this pivotal point in time for women, the empty nest moment where the youngest child has left the house. Through the statistics, you observed that especially, again, this group of college-educated white women is drinking significantly more after their children go off to college. What are your questions about that time of life, and what do you want to know more about as far as how that changes our behavior?
Oh, I want to learn more about how they're experiencing the role transition from not being moms and exactly how that impacts their sense of loss and grief and depression, how that impacts their marital quality or marital equity types of issues. How does that impact, how does this experience impact their relationship with their children once they leave as well? Do they experience a relationship loss, or does alcohol, are they drinking alcohol because now they no longer have that relation strong, if they had a strong relationship with their children? Are they experiencing less stress? Are they experiencing a sense of what do I do with myself? Or are they experiencing a sense of trying to catch up? And then they're becoming overstressed from role overloads, because a lot of the women will return to school, will return to work, and those kinds of things. So I'm looking at what that experience of the empty nest really means for them.
Yeah, there are so many questions. And we're narrowly out of time, but Cassandra, what else is out there that you're hoping to find out more about?
You know, I am particularly interested in how these rates are changing. As you look at this, the 10-year window from when their last child left the home to their next survey, you know, why is it that women who went to grad school drink 5 more drinks a month than they did before their child left the home, but women who went to high school only drink a half a glass more? You know, and on the same point, this is women who are unemployed drink less, you know, a drink and a half less every month. But women who work full time drink 3 glasses more. So there's this 5-point spread. So I'm really interested in these disparities in drinking and how they're increasing over time. And they're making some of our most advantaged groups, socially advantaged groups, really disadvantaged in terms of their health and what that might look like in terms of our long term, you know, our government outlays to be supporting these groups and what this means for our public health dollars moving forward as well.
Well, it sounds like all 3 of you are planning to pursue this research further into the future. Am I right about that?
Yes, actually, I am contributing to the qualitative part of the study by recruiting and for the sample more women of color. So I have a few people lined up for that portion of the study, the qualitative.
All right. And what is your plan? We've got about 30 seconds left, but how long do you expect this research project to go on?
Probably the next, 2 to 3 years at least. You know, it is going to take a lot of time to untangle all of these trends that we're seeing. And, you know, it is, I want to point out that it is an ongoing project. Mm-hmm. And we're just, we're happy to be here and have, you know, be able to talk about these early data findings.
We plan to write lots of refereed articles, and we have a potential book contract in the works.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I hope that you will continue to let us know what you find, and we'll talk more about this in the future. Susan Stewart, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Gloria Jones Johnson, thank you very much.
It has been a pleasure. Thank
and
you.
And Cassandra Dorias, thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
Susan Stewart and Gloria Jones Johnson are both professors of sociology at Iowa State University. Cassandra Dorias, assistant professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. Together, they've been researching a trend where women are more likely to drink alcohol and more likely to drink more alcohol, researching those numbers, but also what's behind them. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.